Financial Survival Network, helping you to survive and thrive in the new economy. Get our complimentary newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. This is the Financial Survival Network.
Financial Survival Network is presented to you by Regal Assets. Buy and sell physical gold and silver through your existing retirement plan 100% tax-free with Regal Assets. If you want to include physical gold or silver in your existing IRA or old 401k, request your free investment kit, which was recently featured in the Forbes and Smart Money Wall Street Journal magazines. Call toll-free 855-678-6620, 855-678-6620, or visit regalassets.com. 1490 WGCH. This is Kerry Lutz, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. The world's appetite and need for energy, especially the expansion of the electrical grid, has no end in sight, and therefore there's only one energy source that we need to be looking at when it comes to electricity. It's going to power the world for decades to come, and that is nuclear power. And when you're talking nuclear power, you're talking uranium. And when you're talking uranium, you need to be talking to the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how you doing?
I'm well, Kerry. Thanks for the kind words.
Yeah, well, you've been on a uranium kick for a long time, and I must confess that you haven't pulled me along until this point. Interesting things are happening in the industry now.
Yeah, it's one of these things where the cure for low prices is low prices. We talked, I don't know, right before the election, and I was telling you about how the Obama administration, through the DOE, had increased inventory sales, and it had depressed the price of uranium, basically because of these 800 jobs in Ohio, and he wanted to carry Ohio. At that time, we predicted that it was going to end after the election, and I don't know if it's ended or not, but this is what I do know. The week before the election, the spot price hit $40, and that was well past a two-year low. I think it was a low price about July of 2010, and sure enough, post-election, the price started to increase, and it's kind of gone exponential over the past, say, 5 weeks. With a spot price Thursday at $45.50. Now that since backed off a bit. The broker average price, which basically splits the bid and ask, settled back down to $44.75. But, you know, this is simply supply-demand fundamentals, capitalism at work. The uranium market is very convoluted. There's a variety of products that can satisfy the need. But we've seen a bounce, and that's good for the business.
Right. And you don't think this is just a dead cat bounce. You think this is really the start of a turnaround in uranium prices? Because I'm looking at the chart, and it's a really awful looking chart until right after the election.
Yeah, and then we see what a 12% increase over the course of 4 or 5 weeks. As I alluded to, there's a variety of products that can serve nuclear power needs, and we've talked previously about these DOE inventory sales. Concomitantly, we had enrichment of tails going on, which can substitute for mined uranium. You've got the conversion industry, which is basically the conversion of uranium hexafluoride into the usable U308 product. We have the heavy enriched uranium to light enriched uranium program between Russia and the U.S., which is scheduled to end at the end of this year. We have utility stockpiles, and then we have mine production. So all these things go into somewhat of a convoluted and very opaque market.
Yeah.
The real problem has been, go ahead.
Yep, sure. And I was going to say, for the domestic producers, they've been choking on these prices, where they've gone down to. It's really put a lot of domestic projects on hold right now.
Well, not only domestic projects, but worldwide projects.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's estimated that new mines, new conventional mines, whether they be underground or open pit, will require something on the order of $75 to $85 pound uranium price. Now, the long-term contract price is $60, but that's still a long ways from $75 or $80. And even the much cheaper ISR projects, both cheaper in CapEx and operational costs, they're barely breaking even at $40 uranium. So when these prices get low, you see supply disruption, if not outright destruction. And so we've seen that, and the prices bounced up again because the spot market got tight. The real problem here is a couple of things. We have a 10% decrease in demand post-Fukushima, and that's basically because 48 of 50 nuclear reactors remain offline in Japan. That's about 10% of world demand. However, a very much pro-uranium party has just been overwhelmingly elected in Japan. I don't know if you're aware of that. The Liberal Democratic Party, very pro-uranium, has come back into power, and they wiped out the previous government. It was a landslide.
Sure.
So the feeling now is that we will be looking at more restarts of nuclear reactors in Japan. You know, it's costing those guys $100 million a day in increased costs with oil and liquefied natural gas. So we've seen major capital projects postponed worldwide. The enrichment demand has been much less because of Japanese utilities not taking in any enriched product, and so the enrichers started selling into the spot market. So just one of these things, low prices is the cure for low prices.
Yep, and no doubt we've got four nuclear power plants in different stages of development here in the U.S. with the promises of a lot more to follow as well, which is really kind of remarkable in and of itself.
Well, it's a good sign anyway, but the problem in the U.S. is we're still only producing about 7% of our annual usage from domestic mine supply. There are a couple of projects in progress, ISR projects, that will contribute, but you know, the U.S. is very short-sighted here. Most of the increased demand in the world has been coming from Kazakhstan over the last 5 or 6 years. It now produces greater than one-third of all the uranium mined in the world. And with future demand growth robust, and we're all convinced that's true, no matter what happens in Japan, no matter what happens with the Germans, who now are importing power from France, and it's kind of curious that they are shutting have shut some of their older reactors down, and they are importing power from France, which gets 75 to 80% of its electricity from nuclear.
Yeah.
Good old Areva there. So you know, we've got this future demand growth in China and India and Korea and Russia and the Middle East. My gosh, the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates have flat out stated and have backed up their statements with action that they are increasingly going to nuclear. So it's clean, it's green, it's the baseload electrical power of the future, and so I remain a uranium bull.
Yeah, me too, and interesting you raise that Kazakhstan production, because 10 years or 12 years ago, Bill Clinton went off to Kazakhstan with a certain Canadian billionaire, and they grabbed those contracts for uranium mine development in Kazakhstan. And in exchange, Bill Clinton got a large, or some would say in exchange, received large contributions to the Clinton Library Fund, Presidential Library. And now Kazakhstan's become a world producer. So there's really a lot of political intrigue in this market as well. You know, you got the weapon conversion story and the environmental story. And it's kind of interesting. It's really kind of epitomizes the merger of markets and political machinations, you know?
Yes, it is, and I think that Canadian well-known billionaire would be Frank Giustra, no doubt.
yes.
Is that correct?
That's yeah. The one.
And, you know, Uranium One is one of the leaders in uranium production, not only in Kazakhstan, but it's also the leading producer in the United States, and it is now 51% owned by the Russians. So, it is the convoluted world that we live in, but for me, the uranium industry has been beaten up. The stocks have been pillaged and pummeled, and I think that we have buying opportunities in uranium space right now. And rest assured, I am continuing to buy uranium stocks.
Yeah. How do you feel about, there's a uranium ETF, correct?
Yeah, there is. And there's actually two ways to play the uranium game. If you want to not invest in individual stocks or speculate in individual stocks, and that would be through a physical uranium ETF, and then there's also a mutual fund which holds uranium companies. But the upside for me is always individual issuers that I see are undervalued with respect to peers. So I tend not to play the uranium funds or the ETF.
Yeah, because you get far more leverage from those undervalued pure uranium plays that are just out there. I mean, there's so much uranium out in the West, in the U.S. I remember talking to somebody at one of the conferences, and it's mind-boggling how unexploited uranium is in the U.S. when we invented the industry. It's just mind-boggling.
Well, you know, I lived about an hour and a half from the world's second largest historic uranium district, the Grants Mineral Belt, and which produced boisterously produced through the mid-80s and hasn't produced a pound of uranium for quite a number of years now. But if memory serves, there's something on the order of 350 million pounds of uranium have come out of the Grants Mineral Belt. And if you add up all the current resources, which at one time were reserves, not classified as such now with 43-101 regs, but there's at least that much uranium still left in the ground that with the right price, and we've already alluded to those prices, would be economic. So, yes, there is a lot of uranium, and you know, New Mexico has so much uranium, we probably glow in the dark.
Yeah, I have to look at the satellite picture. But, you know, you've piqued my interest on it again. I'm definitely going to follow up more, and I think we should follow up on this at certain intervals. Because if you're right, and this price is finally, you know, finally this dog is going to have its day, then it's going to go way higher, not just a measly 12%.
Well, I'm not going to predict the price because, as I've alluded to, there are many factors that go into the spot price, or many, many sources of uranium fuel. It's opaque and somewhat of a convoluted market to understand, but I do know that in the long term that the world will continue to be served with baseload electricity from a significant part of that will be uranium. And so I'm playing this for the mid to long term.
Yeah, and hey, one other thing we got to mention is reactor designs, the way they've evolved since the majority of the world's plants in the U.S. and Europe, 70s vintage, now there's virtually no risk involved in these plants. They're much easier to build and permit, and they're much more efficient than they've ever been, right?
Well, that's true, and, you know, it's the uranium industry, despite the fact that people fear something they can't see, hear, smell, touch, yeah. You know, this radiation floating through the air, whatever yeah. it's supposed to be, is still the cleanest, you know, doesn't kill people like coal does every year.
Yeah, so. No greenhouse gases, no black lung, and obviously it's got to be handled in a very safe manner, but advances are coming at such a rate, and there is these reactors now, it is impossible to have a meltdown in any of these reactors that are being produced at this time now. It just can't happen.
Well, I'm not going to say it's impossible that it can't happen. Okay. I would not go there at all, but they're certainly safer than they were before.
They're safer than they've ever been.
Well, that's true. They're safer than they ever been, and they were pretty safe before. So
yeah, and that also brings in the graphite play in those newer ones too, right?
Yeah, and maybe a thorium play at some point in the future.
Yeah, they're testing the thorium now, I think, in Sweden, if I read correctly.
Oh, they're testing it many countries of the world. So
yeah, it makes a lot of sense. There's definitely a certain attraction to it. So, Mickey, we got to wrap up, but I'll talk to you in a couple weeks for our end of the year review. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. It looks like the metals have caught a bout of pneumonia and are kind of keeling over right now. But who knows what can happen in 2 weeks. Assuming we make it through the next 3 days, the next 2 weeks will be a breeze.
Yeah, we've got the Mayans messing with us on Friday, but I expect to wake up on Saturday morning, and if it's a typical winter day in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I will wake up to the sunrise.
And I plan to be on a tropical island in the Caribbean, and I hope I'm going to wake up with a strawberry daiquiri in my hand.
Okay, Gary.
All right.
That sounds like fun.
You be well.
Okay, thank you.